This is based on a study, a previous study that I had done concerning the impact of women state legislators on women's health policies. So the purpose of this study is to explore whether women's legislative caucuses are instrumental in the passage of key women's health policies. And the previous study looked at, as I said, whether the increased representation in the state legislatures led to women's representation, led to substantive legislation. That is, whether they were acting for women by adopting women's health policies. And the previous results were that women by themselves were not representing women's interests, and the party, political party, and women together impacted positively the passage of women's health policies in 1993-94 session and 1995-96, and that the more professional legislators were less likely to adopt women's health policies. So to do this study, I developed an index of women's health policies, and there are 8 items included in this index. And if a state passed it, they were coded as a 1. If they didn't pass it, they were coded as a 0. And you can pretty much read as to which, there's 4 here and then 4 here. And they're all, first of all, the data was available for them, so it's one of the reasons I selected it. And it happened during the time of intense activity between 93 and 98. And at that time also, it was just after the passage of Clinton's health care reform, not the passage, but the efforts at getting health care reform, and then the HMOs taking a significant grasp of the market for insurance, and concerns whether certain insurances were covering certain procedures. And these are also mandates on health insurance companies so that they would provide the services. And the independent variables that I looked at were the characteristics, women's characteristics, socioeconomic and political factors. And the women's characteristics were the percent of women state legislators, percent of women legislators who are Democrats, and legislators with 20% or more women. Political factors are the legislative professionalism, policy liberalism, political culture, political party, and in this particular study that we're talking about today is the Women's Legislative Caucus. And the political factors, the legislative professionalism means that the legislature has, the state legislature has paid staff that a large number of paid staff, the legislators get an annual salary, and they meet at least on an annual basis, because some of the citizen-type legislators don't meet on an annual basis. They may meet like every other year. And then the policy liberalism is the ideology of the state, depending on what their values and beliefs are concerning the role of government. And then political culture are the basic values of the state. And these are measured using individualistic and moralistic variables. And those were based on a study that was developed by a researcher, a political scientist, to measure political culture across the states. And then political party control is important because Democrats tend to be more favorable of government intervention and social programs and advancing the social welfare. And then women's legislative caucuses, researchers have found that women legislative caucuses, if they have formal ones, that they're more likely to pass policies that are of interest to women. And with the formal legislative caucus, what that means is that they hire staff, that they meet on a weekly or on a monthly basis, and they also are policy oriented. They have like a policy agenda, and they either pay dues or raise funds. Then there are the informal caucuses that they're unstructured, they're more social, and they may meet maybe once or twice a year, and they don't really have policy agendas, but they kind of band together. And there are about 16 states that have formal and about 16 that have informal legislative caucuses. Oops, sorry. And these are the ones who have formal. And it's kind of surprising that a number of them are in the South. And, like, I knew I missed one of them. I'm missing Louisiana. I was trying to... Okay. Well, Louisiana is included in here, too. And so I was kind of surprised that a number of them were in the South. And then these are the informal legislative caucuses. And these are the states that don't have any. If I'm going too fast. But then the socioeconomic factors, and these have been known to have been factors that do impact the passage of policies at the state level, that they've had influence on it. So they needed to be included in the study. With the exception of level of education, these education does impact certain policies at the state level. However, in this particular study, I excluded it because the majority of the women who do, who are state legislators, are pretty well educated. So we thought that we could just omit that one. And this was for a 10-year time frame from 1993 to 2002. I merged the data for this particular study for the 10 years. In the previous study, I did it by 5 2-year sessions, but for this one, I merged it together, and the states were the units of analysis. And this is just a breakdown by the 5 2-year sessions, the percent of women state legislators by state. And in 1993-94, it started off at 20.5 with a high of 39, and then it increased slightly by 2000-2001 to 22.6%, but then the highest percent did drop. And the percent of women legislators who are Democrats, very high in 93-94, but we also had Clinton come into office, and it was also Democrats who were in Congress. And excuse me. And then you notice that they are dipping down with the percentage. It dipped in 97-98, and then it slowly is going back up. But women state legislators are, as you can see, predominantly Democrats. And then the other area that we looked at was whether there had to be a critical mass of women in the state legislators to impact or affect policy. And Cantor, who indicated she'd done some studies at corporate level, and she found that for minorities to have some kind of an impact, they had to have a critical mass. And what I used was 20% or more. She had indicated that 20% would be a significant factor to at least have some influence, significant number. And then these are the mean number of policies that were passed, and I have prior to 1993, and that's to account for policies that had been passed before I started looking at that particular time frame. And the mean number that had been passed had been 1.2, and then the last one is for the 10-year period. And as you can see, 97 to 98 had the highest mean of the 5 sessions. And these are the these are the frequencies of the policies being adopted by the states. And breast cancer screening, before even 1993, 38% of the states had mandated that at least, you know, women have access to mammograms, that the insurance companies pay for it. and then it jumped to 47 in 2002, and then you can see where ends, like direct access to OB, and OB is PCP, and then the family planning waivers and the contraceptives. Before 1993, there had not been any policies that had been passed, and then they had jumped, even though contraceptive coverage and family planning waivers were still low. And so these were the control variables: the wealth, urbanism, political party, and the ideology. And ideology and liberalism, I use Gray's index, where she developed it, looking at key variables. And the more conservative she put it as, the more conservative the state, the higher number, but I had to reverse it so that it wouldn't look odd. And used two regression models in this particular one, looked at the percent of women legislators and then also the critical mass of women legislators, whether 20% or greater. And, I can hardly see this. Anyway, for the 1993 to 2002, what came through is a political culture, individualistic and moralistic, had a negative relationship with, and it was statistically significant, with the passage of women's policies, with the percent of women legislators, and I included the formal women's caucus in this particular one. I ran six models with the formal women's caucuses only, and then combined the formal and informal. And none of them actually showed any impact by the women's legislative caucus, but the ones that did come through strongly were the political culture, the individualistic and traditionalistic, and that was at the P less than 0.01. And I'm sorry that these are, well, all the variables are there, but it, as you can see, it's the political culture, as I said, and the moralistic and the liberalism. And this is with the combined, including with the percent of women legislators. And this one is, this is a combined with a critical mass of 20%, and they still have not had any statistical significant impact. And this is the formal. And so as you can see, they have not that much of, according to this, the presence of women legislative caucuses, there's no statistically significant impact, but policy liberalism was really statistically significant, and then political culture, and individualistic and moralistic, it had a negative impact. So that meant that the presence of states were, I have to explain this, states where there were strong in their individualistic and political moralistic political culture had a negative impact, so that meant that the traditionalistic, which was more of the elitist, and southern states had a positive impact on the passage of the women's health policies, which appears counterintuitive. However, when you looked at the number of states that had formal political caucuses, they were, a number of them were from the South. Hello. I guess it's not as loud. Okay. I'll try and talk. This isn't... Ah, there it goes. Okay, so the conclusions of this are that the presence of women's legislative caucuses do not appear a significant factor, and that the policy liberalism and political culture are important factors, but there are limitations. You know, it's less than 100, and there are only 8 policies that were included in this particular study. And the data on the presence or absence of the caucuses is really incomplete. I was able to get the data from the National Conference of State Legislators, and they indicated that there were a number of them that they were able to tell me when they started, but then there were a few that they weren't able. So I had to exclude those from the initial analysis because, you know, they could have been founded after 2002, but with the so that's why it went from 1993 to 2002, merged it together, because at least some of them had been around. It was easier to do it that way because it was difficult to find out the exact date that they started. And so this needs to, and so for further research, need to look at other factors might impact it, such as the agenda setting process. What role did women have in getting issues onto the political agenda? And then other interest groups. Like, I didn't include the women's commissions. A number of states have women's commissions or women's political caucuses that are comprised of people, of women outside of the legislature. So that may be a significant factor, and that would be another study. Okay, thank you. Yes? I did, and I did with this one, but I forgot the table for it, so I didn't. So, but actually, political party did not have any. The political party did not have any impact. I included the women's political party and excluded the legislators because there had been an interaction effect. If I include them both, because there was such a strong relationship, but. Women's political party had no impact either when I combined it from 93 to 2002, but when I looked at it from 93, 94, it did have. Women Democrats were the ones who had the impact.